But making the leap online early has really helped me gain the visibility and also make the online contacts that I think are critical to success in an information-driven profession like the law.
Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Welcome to episode 22 of The Law Entrepreneur. My name is Neil Tyra, and I am your host as always. Today, I'm very happy to have Lisa Solomon as my guest. Since 1966, her law practice has been focused exclusively on working as a freelance lawyer, helping solos and small firms nationwide with all of their legal research and writing needs. For the past 10 years, she's also maintained a coaching and consulting practice, teaching other lawyers how to start and run successful practices as freelance lawyers, and teaching lawyers in all practice areas how to become better writers. This month, she launched Now Counsel Network, which is a nationwide network of experienced freelance lawyers who provide project-based and temporary support to help solos and small law firms increase their profits and decrease stress and get their lives back. The network offers the convenience of allowing hiring firms to review multiple lawyer biographies on one website. It serves as kind of like a matchmaking service, matching solos and small firms with the best freelance lawyers in their network for any particular engagement. I refer to it as something of the Uber of freelance lawyering. So I think it's a tremendous business model, particularly for solos who need to hire legal help but aren't quite yet in the position to hire a full-time associate. And it's a model that I think is going to serve the legal community well, and I plan to use myself. And I'll let you know how that goes. But in the meantime, let's talk to the founder and CEO of Now Counsel Network, Ms. Lisa Solomon. Hey there, Lisa. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us today. Lisa, tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and how you got to be where you are.
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, I've been working as a freelance attorney for the last 20 years. For the last 10 of those years, I've also had a coaching and consulting practice, which you mentioned. And this month, I launched my most recent venture called Now Counsel Network.
So have you always been an entrepreneurial legal business owner, or did you at some point work for a firm?
Well, right out of law school, I did go to work for a small litigation boutique in Midtown Manhattan. I went to law school in New York City, so stayed in New York City and worked there for a couple of years at that small firm. But the firm was having some internal problems amongst the partners, and all of the rats on the sinking ship decided that we should get while the getting was good. So I ended up leaving and actually going to work for LexisNexis, acting as a trainer in the New York City area law schools. There's a lot of law schools in New York City and the immediate surrounding area. So for about a year, I worked as a trainer for LexisNexis.
And is that where you developed your entrepreneurial aspirations?
No, I think it was just something in me. It did definitely, I think, help with my presentation skills, which is not to say that I won't say or
sure
during this interview. But I do think it helped me become more comfortable with public speaking. So when that school year, that was, so that lasted for about one school year. Toward the end of that year, a firm where I had worked when I was in college, I'd worked as a paralegal for a law firm up in Boston. It turns out that they had some New York cases, and they also needed someone to work with them. They wanted someone to work remotely as an employee, but remotely. And this is in, remember, in the mid-90s, around 1996. So, like I said, based in Boston, but the work they needed done was drafting coverage opinions. They did a lot of insurance coverage work. And they asked me if I would like to work as a remote employee for them. So I said, sure, why not? I mean, it was fantastic. I was able to work from home.
And this was a firm that you had done business with when you were with your other firm or when you were with LexisNexis?
No, this is when I was in college.
Oh, in college. Okay.
I worked there as a paralegal.
So I'm sorry.
I was an employee full-time during a few summers and part-time during some school years. And so I had worked for them while I was in college.
So it was a perfect fit for them to reach out to you. Having been a known quantity.
Right. No, I was really pleased, you know, that we stayed in touch and that they called on me when they needed some help. So because it really did help me get my start. Initially, I was a W-2 employee, and I could work as they were paying me hourly. I wasn't salaried. They were paying me hourly, and I could have worked 24/7 for them. They had that much work, but I had the ability to choose how much work I wanted to do, which was really a perfect setup. And I could do it from home. Even this is in the mid-90s. So it was the old dial-up modem and but
a lot, lot of snail mail back and forth.
I'd say a lot of snail mail or printing of files, right? Yeah. That they might email me stuff, but I would print it. Email was much slower. I was doing online research, but of course everything was very slow. I couldn't talk on the phone when I was researching online.
Right.
So, but you know, that's how it was, and it got me started. You know, after a while they said, you know, we've decided that we'd like you to be an independent contractor at 1099 rather than a W-2. So I said, okay, well, then I'm going to go get my own clients. You know, I had wanted to work from home. One reason that I had left working in an office, working at that Midtown firm and not gone to another firm is because at the time, you know, my husband was also a practicing lawyer, and we figured that it was not a good idea for two practicing lawyers who worked for other people to have, it wouldn't be easy to have a family, and we wanted to have a family.
Right.
And so, and because he was 10 years further along in his career and more settled with his firm, we decided that I would be the one to do something different and maybe work for myself.
And that's interesting because at that time, I'm old enough to remember, although I wasn't in the legal profession at the time, but at that time, correct me if I'm wrong, there weren't a whole lot of attorneys or anybody really providing legal services from their home, were there?
Yeah, I think it was very, I think there's always been contract attorneys, but it's been very informal.
Okay.
And you know, maybe not with people working from home. Right? Maybe a younger or a newer attorney doing an office share with a more established attorney. So more in that sense and working more locally and having more local contacts. So, and I think people were definitely not seeing it as a career path. A lot of people did, and I think still do, contract or freelance work initially when they're getting started in their careers. But over the time that I've been doing freelance work, either in combination with some traditional direct representation of clients or exclusively like I do, has become a very interesting career path. And it's become more popular for lawyers.
Yeah, and I'm interested in the label that you attach to it, freelance lawyering or freelance services, as opposed to contract lawyering and contract services, because my sense is, and maybe that's just a Washington, D.C. bias, but my sense is that when we talk about contract lawyering here, we're talking basically about document review and discovery support, which is, doesn't have a great, you know, feel to it, a great understanding. So I like the idea of freelance lawyering because it, to me, it suggests a broader scope of services that can be offered.
That's exactly right. That's one reason why a number of years ago that I and a number of other people who are active as leaders in this niche area of the profession started using the term freelance lawyer. Because as you said, especially on the coasts, contract lawyers, when you hear the term contract lawyer, you think about people doing document review in some basement.
Exactly.
they generally work under not great working conditions. The pay isn't very good, and they're working for agencies. Whereas freelance lawyers are independent professionals with their own, generally with their own practices, and they go out and get their own clients and run their own firms.
So let's go back to when your initial employer decided to transition you from a W-2 to a 1099 employee. Your first thought was, oh, that's great. Now I can go get my own clients. Had you been thinking about that along the way, or did you have that entrepreneurial spirit in mind? Do you come from that kind of background, or just did that seem to be the natural consequence of that transition?
Well, I mean, I didn't really have a choice.
Well, true.
So, and also, although the firm, as I mentioned, they had as much work as I could take because they had a lot of volume and it was available to me, the rate was not that high. I mean, still now, I must say, it's the rate that I was getting then 20 years ago from them was higher than the rate that a document review attorney would get today.
Wow.
Unless they have some, you know, special skills, which is, again, one reason why I don't use the term contract lawyer, and freelance lawyers generally don't use the term contract lawyer, except to say that, you know, except to distinguish ourselves from, you know, freelance lawyers from contract lawyers.
Right.
But, you know, I felt that if I was doing work for other clients, I could charge higher rates. And I did. Even with my first client outside that firm, the rate was double what they were paying me.
And you found clients who were willing to engage you at that rate?
Yes. Yes. You know, I had a pretty decent background, pretty decent credentials, even though I was fairly new attorney. I had gone to a good law school, and I think, you know, they saw what my skills were like, and they felt I was worth it, I guess.
Yeah. And so how did you go about getting those new clients once you became an independent contractor?
Well, my first client came as a referral. As I mentioned, my husband was a practicing attorney at the time.
Okay.
And at a deposition, one of his opposing counsels mentioned that he had an appeal to do on another case. And my husband said, oh, my wife does appeals.
Yep.
And, you know, that was the connection that was made. And it went from there. You know, beyond that, as I was getting started out, I did all of the normal things one does when one starts a practice. I attended a lot of local bar association functions and pressed the flesh. I did some limited advertising in the local bar association newsletters, some limited paid advertising. I haven't done any paid advertising, whether it's in hard copy or not even Google AdWords, for many, many years. But I mean, it did help when I was getting started.
Sure. Sure. And I think in again, back in those days, although it's not all that long ago, but it is somewhat back in those days, the Bar Association newsletters were a great source for that type of advertising when you are directly appealing to other attorneys for work that you can do on their behalf.
Right, right. I mean, although
it's a natural fit.
Right. I mean, even back then, though, after I advertised for a few years, I became active, for example, in my local Women's Bar Association, and I became a committee chair of the practice management committee. And so once in a while, I would write my own articles, but usually I would get permission to republish articles, written blog posts get permission to repost them as articles in the Westchester Women's Bar Association newsletter with full attribution to the original author. But the article would also include a little blurb about me at the bottom, that I was co-chair of the practice management committee. And that was a monthly column in the newsletter. So I got a lot of exposure that way as well. And that also being active included attending board meetings and things like that. But to be quite honest, I found that I got the most bang for my buck, or should I say not for my buck because it was for free, more from other types of networking, particularly online networking, even back then.
Such as what?
Well, before Twitter and Facebook, there were email lists.
Sure.
This is social media 1.0.
Right.
And I've been very involved with it for much of my solo career. And I think it's still email lists or social media that works in similar ways to email lists are really a great opportunity to network with other lawyers. I think it's such a great opportunity. I even wrote a published article back in 2012 about adding email lists to your marketing mix. And that was, after Facebook and Twitter had been around for a while. But, I thought back in 2012, and I continue to think then, that email lists are particularly valuable. One that has been absolutely critical to the success of my career is one that anybody can join, and it doesn't cost anything. It's called Solo Says. It's spelled S-O-L-O-S-E-Z, and it's run by the Solo GP Division of the American Bar Association.
Right. So I want to get into that in just a second. Let me ask you, though, about your article. Will you send me a link to that article, and we'll publish it in our show notes so that any of our readers who would like to look it up can do so?
Definitely.
Great. So then, did your original business, did it remain a solo practice, so to speak? Was it just you, or did you add staff, or how did that go?
Right, right. Well, for the past 20 years, I've been pretty much a true solo with not even any part-time staff. The only thing that I did use was, on occasion, I've used a virtual assistant to help with very discrete projects, such as putting together a PowerPoint for presentations. One reason I did that is because I could spend hours and hours going through stock photos. And I knew that it was a danger of not being necessarily the best use of my time, the most productive use of my time. And I'm also not the most artistic person. So I've worked with a virtual assistant to help me with that kind of stuff. If I wasn't fairly technically inclined, I might have used a virtual assistant for other things as well. But I'm fairly comfortable learning new tech, and so I didn't really have that need.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit how you went about finding the right virtual assistant.
I got a referral.
There you go.
Yep.
Just asked around who knows a virtual assistant and who might be able to do this type of job. And
right. Well, I actually just asked a close colleague. I don't know if I asked her specifically who she uses, or I was talking to her about needing one. And she said, oh, I have a great one. Here's her name. So I didn't have to ask around too much.
Good. So you say that you're comfortable learning new technology. Tell us a little bit about what role technology plays in the development of the companies that you've created.
Technology has been a key to the success, all the success I've had in all the businesses I've launched, in the last 20 years. I think it does pay to be an early adopter. For example, I was one of the first lawyers to recognize and to take advantage of the technological advances that make outsourcing legal research and writing services practical and profitable for firms of all sizes. For example, just the very basic ability to exchange documents by email. Back in 1996, that was a big deal.
Right.
and in fact, I had to drag some of my clients kicking and screaming into the internet age. Although I could do legal research online, my dial-up connection, as I mentioned, it was painfully slow compared to my nice Fios service now.
Right.
But making the leap online early has really helped me gain the visibility and also make the online contacts that I think are critical to success in an information-driven profession like the law.
Well, it also allows your skills to develop over the course of time as technology improves.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you started off with this company, and now you've transitioned to something new called Now Counsel Network. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So tell us all about Now Counsel.
Great, sure. So Now Counsel Network, as mentioned in the intro, is a nationwide network of experienced freelance lawyers who provide project-based and temporary support to help solos and small firms increase their profits, decrease their stress, and get their lives back. So what the network does, what I do in my role with the network is I'm handling everything, although I anticipate that the company will grow quickly and soon hopefully I will be bringing on additional management. But right now I'm the chief cook and bottle washer. What the network does is we recruit freelance lawyers, qualified freelance lawyers. All the freelance lawyers in the network have to have at least 7 years of experience in practice and or as a legal research and writing instructor at a law school. And those are the basic qualifications. We review writing samples, check their bar admission and disciplinary status, and check references as well. And then once we admit someone into the network, they get on our roster of approved freelancers. They have a profile on our website. And then when a solo or small firm, or maybe a corporation's law department needs some help with anything, you know, basically the freelance attorneys in our network can do anything that a lawyer in your office could do, that an associate could do.
Sure.
So when a solo or small firm or a law department at a corporation needs some extra help with either a particular project, such as an appeal or a summary judgment motion on a particular case, or maybe they need short-term temporary help because, let's say one of their attorneys has gone on maternity leave for 6 weeks, then they would contact us and give us some basic information about the project, names of the parties so that the freelance attorney that we match them with can do a conflicts check before going any further, some other information about the project, deadlines, et cetera. And then I match the hiring attorney with the member of our network who is best qualified and is the best match for their particular engagement.
Interesting. So if I said you were the Uber of freelance lawyering, it's not too far off.
I would say that's a good analogy. In particular, one reason is because we do have a proprietary billing platform. Just like, you know, Uber has its own platform, we don't have, you know, well, we don't have a mobile app, at least not yet. We do have a proprietary platform through which our freelancers bill the hiring firms so that the network can take its fee from what the freelancer collects. And however, there's never a cost. We never charge a fee to the hiring firm to submit an engagement or to be matched with a freelance attorney.
It's only after they establish the engagement.
Well, the party that's paying the fee is the freelance attorney.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Because we're providing marketing and administrative services to the freelance attorney.
Sure. And now, does the engaging attorney or engaging firm, do they pay through that platform as well, or do they pay outside of that?
Yes. No, they do pay for the only thing they do is pay through the platform is pay. The freelance lawyers send out invoices through the platform and the firms pay the invoices.
Excellent.
Through the platform. However, confidentiality is maintained because as a lawyer, I understand that some information that's contained in lawyer invoices might be confidential.
Sure.
So it's set up so that Now Counsel Network does not have access to any descriptions of the work performed, only to the amounts billed.
Very, very well thought out. You know, I think this is frankly just brilliant. We had Valerie Nowotnik on early in the life of this podcast. Valerie runs a company that provides paralegal services in much the same way. And so for small firms and solo practitioners, this solves, both her company and a company like yours, solves a real dilemma for solos, because there comes a time when you need help in the office, but you don't have enough work to hire somebody.
Yes, that's one of the big reasons that lawyers work with freelance attorneys or, you know, paralegals. Yep. Like Valerie provides, you know, needing someone to do additional work, but not having enough work to support a new employee is one reason. Another reason is maybe it's a very temporary need, right? You may have a very temporary need because deadlines, maybe the courts have conspired against you. Yeah. And all your deadlines are all piled up and you're just having a really tough month or, you know, tough quarter. And so you need to offload a few projects off your plate. Or, you know, maybe you don't like doing motions,
a
particular task, or maybe you're not comfortable doing an appeal. You know, there's a lot of reasons, or maybe things are going great, but you just want to have more time for yourself. So you've been working, you know, when I say things have been going great, you know, your business is going well, but maybe you're just working, you're tired of working every night and half or all of the weekend. So you just want to give yourself a little safety valve.
Well, and if you're like me, when the weather gets warm, I feel a whole lot less like working.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a number of different reasons why somebody could take advantage of the services that you have to offer. And you've just touched on a half dozen of them. And I think, as I said, I mean, I don't want to toot your horn for you, but I just think it's brilliant.
Well, thank you. And toot away.
Yeah. So, but the point I was trying to make is I think there's, for many solos, they get to that point where they have to make this decision. I got so much work, or I don't have enough work that I can hire somebody, but I can't grow my business if I'm working, you know, 16 hours a day just to get the legal work out the door.
Exactly. Right.
Don't forget. And so this is a real lifestyle issue as well.
Yes. I mean, and also it's a business issue, because don't forget, as solos and even in small firms, you know, small firms generally don't have, you know, they may have a few lawyers, but they may not have that many people on the admin side. So lawyers in solo and small firms are still doing pretty much all their own admin, particularly things like marketing.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, so it's important to have enough time to do those kinds of things, because when you're busy getting the work out, that's one thing that often falls by the wayside is really growing your practice and working on your practice as opposed to working in your practice.
Well, I think you're ahead of the curve, Lisa. And I think that this is really going to be the wave of the future for a lot of small and mid-sized firms, that rather than taking on an associate, it's going to be using services like yours, where you have a pre-screened, qualified, experienced attorney who you can use as the work dictates and as your need dictates. So I really think it's a brilliant business model.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you.
Well, you mentioned a little bit earlier about Solo Says, and we mentioned in the intro that you've been involved with Solo Says for a long time, and I guess right now you're one of the moderators?
No, I'm not a moderator. Solo Says is actually not a moderated list, except to the extent, I mean, there is a list manager who gets paid by the ABA, and you know, and there's some rules, and it's a very self-policing community. I'm not a moderator. I'm just a very active participant.
Okay, so when people refer to you as the Solo Says goddess, I guess I just assume it's because you were the moderator, that you were just so instrumental in its in the value that the list provides. Tell me some of the things that you have seen the list assist or help solo practitioners and how they may take advantage of it.
Well, you know, it's really a community. It really is. Even though it's online, it's first and foremost a community. And so what that means is people, members of the list, rely on each other for all kinds of things. Solo says, unlike some other email lists, has never really been limited to you can only talk about law. It's very, very open-ended. People, there's a very frequent, every once in a while, there's the debate about which way the toilet paper goes over the roll.
Sure.
And so
there's quite a lot of discussion about favorite libations as well, which is I find interesting.
Well, that's a list rule. When you join for your first post, you got to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your pets and what you like to drink. And again, that's part of forming the community. But even beyond the intros that everybody, you know, that people are supposed to post when they join, people use the list for all kinds of things, whether it's a home repair question, but it's not purely social. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of discussion about law practice management on the list, everything from hiring and staffing to technology to best practices with billing, ethics questions, and then the practice area questions as well. The list, different groups in various locations and localities have regular get-togethers. There's also the National Solo and Small Firm Conference, started I think maybe around 10 years ago. And that was partly, I believe, I've never been involved in the ABA's, you know, officially in the GP solo division, in the solo GP division officially. But my understanding is that one reason they started the National Solo and Small Firm Conference was to give the folks on Solo Says an opportunity to meet in person, you know, beyond their local area.
Is that in Chicago?
That conference moves.
Oh.
There's some ABA Tech Show is in Chicago every year. That's run by the Law Practice Division. But the National Solo and Small Conference moves around from year to year. You know, groups and, you know, marriages have resulted from people who met on the list.
Oh.
You know, and I personally have made wonderful close friendships as well as a lot of very valuable business relationships through the list.
So tell our listeners, if they're inclined, how they could get involved with Solo Says.
Just go to solosays.net. That's S-O-L-O-S-E-Z. And there'll be instructions on how to sign up. Like I said, you do not have to be a member of the ABA.
My understanding also is you don't actually have to be a lawyer either.
That's correct. That's
so there's,
correct.
There are some paralegals, some law firm administrators, that type.
Tech folks, yes. And so it's just when you post, if you're not a lawyer, you just need to identify yourself as a non-lawyer in your signature block.
Okay.
But otherwise, you have full posting and participation privileges.
Great. Well, Lisa, this has been terrific. As I said, I think you're right on the cutting edge here of a new paradigm in the legal profession. I wish you a great deal of success. I'd like to check in with you again down the road to see how Now Counsel Network is doing, if that's okay.
Oh, absolutely.
And tell our listeners how they might get in contact with you or how potential clients might take advantage of Now Counsel Network.
Well, our website is nowcounselnetwork.com. Just like it sounds, nowcounselnetwork.com. And you can reach me directly at lisa@nowcounselnetwork.com.
Okay. Well, that sounds great, Lisa. I appreciate you being on The Law Entrepreneur, and I look forward to a continuing relationship with you down the road.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
My pleasure. Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening and being a part of today's program. The utmost compliment you could pay me is to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a strong 5-star review if you think the podcast and what we're trying to do here is worthwhile. Feel free to share the link to the podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. I would be very appreciative if you did. So until next time, thanks again for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.